Now, today's theme, if you haven't been listening, is American standards. And I'm not talking about the toilets. We're talking about true American icons here. And our next guest subscribes to Herbert Hoover's observation that the business of America is business. In case you haven't noticed, however, business is getting a bad rap lately after the crash of 2008 and 2009. The truth is, the boom and bust is the business as usual for the United States. Just take a look at the first decade of the 21st century, for example. We had the Y2K scare, where we thought all the airplanes were going to drop out of the sky. That was followed by the dot-com boom and the dot-com bust. The Enron, WorldCom, Global Crossing, all of those scandals came along. The Dow Jones climbed up to 14,000 points and then dropped back down to where it is today, somewhere around 9,750. The banking industry's collapse and two of the big three auto manufacturers bailed out by our government. The next guest is going to explain how the economy works and maybe, just maybe, help us understand the crashes. Andrew Schiff is the Director of Marketing and Communications for Euro-Pacific Capital. Working closely with his brother Peter Schiff for more than 7 years, Andrew has helped shape, develop, refine, and target Euro-Pacific strategic communications for media clientele and has been instrumental in raising the firm's public profile. Over the course of his career, Andrew has consulted with many multi-billion dollar asset management firms in the development and execution of media strategy and communications. He's a graduate of the University of California at Santa Barbara, where he majored in English literature. You can see that that certainly helped him. And a veteran of media and marketing consultant in the financial services industry, Andrew Schiff serves as an integral component of the communications and media effort at Euro-Pacific Strategies. He has written a book with his brother Peter Schiff that illustrates the economics, and the book's titled How the Economy Grows and When It Crashes.
And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
It turns the brains into guacamole.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Billy the Brain, and welcome back to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain, where today's theme is American standards, true American icons. And as I said at the outset, my next guest subscribes to Herbert Hoover's observation, the business of America is business. A graduate of UCSB, just up the road from us here in Ventura County, Andrew Schiff is the Director of Marketing and Communications for Euro-Pacific Capital, but that's not what he's best known for. He's best known for the book that he has just written. It is titled, How an Economy Grows and Why It Crashes. Boy, it couldn't be more timely. Welcome to the show, Andrew.
Thank you. Nice being here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you as our guest. What's that?
You know, I'm talking to you from New York City sitting right now, and it's about 98 degrees right now and humid. Yesterday it was above 100 degrees, so we are suffering over here. And the big, beautiful Pacific with the Channel Islands, the distance doesn't sound too terrible right now.
Oh, I know. I read it in the newspaper. You had a record heat yesterday. It's a heat wave. I wish we could send you our cool weather and we could get some of your warm weather. I think that would be a good exchange.
I was watching the Yankee game last night, and it was in Oakland, and I was noticing the people in the stands were like wearing jackets. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Everyone was bundled up.
It is cool out here.
That's crazy.
No.
And the thing about it is that we haven't, it's been, I don't talk about the weather, but fortunately, it was very, very hot, but it only lasted like 5 or 6 days. A real heat wave here in the East would last like 2 weeks. So it's going to get a little cooler tomorrow, I think. A little cooler. It'll be only 90 instead of 100.
Well, we'll hope for the best that things cool down and everybody can kind of get back to normal summertime weather on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. So you've written this book, How an Economy Grows and Why It Crashes. And mm-hmm. to tell your story, you created sort of a little parable. You created a fictional island, Estonia, and three fictitious characters, Abel, Baker, and Charlie, to make your points. So why did you choose to write the book as a parable rather than just a straight economic text? And how can just three people prove the point of an entire economy?
Well, what we're trying to do is economics is a big, vast, murky subject most people look at, try to read the headlines or watch financial television, and they listen to these professors and pundits talk, and their heads start to spin, and they feel like they're listening to a foreign language, and they get a vague sense that what people are saying doesn't really make a lot of sense, at least doesn't make sense in their own personal lives. But, it's got to be true. These are people who know what they're talking about. And we're trying to show people that economics is a lot actually simpler than these people make it out to be. And it is intuitive if you look at it in the right way. And what we're trying to do with this book is right now, you know, the Keynesians you mentioned earlier, the Keynesians or the Keynesian school of thought is the dominant school of thought in the world of economics today, and it's completely dominant. And one of the central tenets of Keynesianism, as we're trying to lampoon here, is that there's essentially different rules of economy that come into play at the very large scale, the macro scale, and the micro scale. And we try to say that is ridiculous. That what's good that works for an economy at a very small scale also works at a very large scale.
All right, that's an important point to make. So that's what you're trying to do by using the parable. Go on and explain more, please.
Right. So basically, what we try to get the first thing we try to make people understand is the very simple concept of what makes an economy grow. Why do and what does even an economy grow mean? What does that even mean? Well, it really means that people that living standards expand. See, we measure economic growth by spending, by GDP, and that's how much people spend. But does that really mean anything, that people spend more? Does that mean that living standards go up? What does it mean when an economy goes up? Well, we try to make it clear that means that people actually have more stuff. And in this case, we have three guys who fish with their hands, and they catch more fish by inventing a net. And then they have more fish, and that means their economy is expanded, not because they spend more on fish, but because they have more fish to go around, and their living standards increase. And people have lost that. People don't understand that in order to make us, you know, we should be pursuing policies that expand the amount of things that we produce, that expand our efficiency. Right now, what we're trying to do within our economy is simply pump up spending and pump up borrowing. And that doesn't mean anything. It doesn't make an economy grow. It doesn't make any difference to how people live, and in fact creates more problems down the road. And we use this very simple story to illustrate that. We also use the story to illustrate, you know, not only how an economy grows, but how prices work, how productivity causes prices to come down and allows more and more people to get the kind of goods that in prior generations only rich people could get.
All right.
It talks about deflation and why that's not the terrible thing that people make it out to be, and why it is that a stimulus, an economy based on stimulating spending with debt can't work. And if you look at the book and you look at the way it's set up, it all makes very, very, very clear sense. And really, we wrote it so that the average person who never read a book on economics, who doesn't really enjoy talking about it, but really wants to know a little bit more about how our world is working, can pick up this book, read it, see the parallels with our own world. I mean, we bring in the Chinese, we call them the Sinopians, the different islands. The United States is called the Houstonians. We briefly and kind of very allegorically sketch the history of the United States economy over the last 100 years, starting and going from the Depression to today. But we do it in a way that's very light, very funny. Lots of pictures. You know, we hired an illustrator to do the book. We've got over 180 illustrations to make it a story that people can really relate to. And also, you know, people can read. They can give it to their kids. I mean, really, a 12 or 13 year old kid can read this book and have a much greater understanding of, you know, how an economy works. Why capitalism really works. And people right now, we're getting in a situation where capitalism is being vilified by many people, and people are starting questioning whether capitalism is ultimately destructive or not. And this book makes it very clear how capitalism works, why self-interest is a positive thing in the economy, why you know, someone doesn't get rich by making other people poor, but why people only can get rich by actually creating an efficiency.
All right, we're talking to Andrew Schiff, everybody. He's the author of a brand new book, How an Economy Grows and Why It Crashes, a wonderful little parable. I do want to circle back around to the book, because Andrew, in your talk there, you brought up so many different factors that your book covers, and I want to come back to the three main characters and how their little economy of fishing grows in Houstonia, which is your little fictitious island that you've created.
Houstonia.
Okay. Can't read my own writing here. Houstonia. All right, so the three main characters are Abel, Baker, and Charlie,
yeah.
And nothing happens. They're all out doing their own thing, trying to catch fish, pretty inefficient at it. Nothing happens until Abel becomes an entrepreneur and invents
right.
the net. So talk to us about what three guys represent.
About, what we did, and by the way, this I wrote the book with my brother, Peter Schiff, who's much more widely known than I am. He's the president of a company called Europe Pacific Capital. I work at Europe Pacific Capital as a communications director, but Peter's the president and the founder. It's an investment firm, and Peter's has written other best-selling books, and he's been on TV hundreds of times, national television, Peter Schiff, and he's running for the Senate in the state of Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
But what we did, so in the island, each person catches one fish per day, which is exactly how many fish they need to survive. This is a subsistence-level economy, which is exactly the same kind of economy that every other animal on the face of the earth has. I mean, you basically eat, you know, you basically spend all day looking for the food you need that day, and that's all you have. Now, what we try to say is that's where we'd be if we didn't have an economy. And what's an economy? Well, we have tools. We can maximize the productivity of our labor. That's what makes our economy possible. That's what makes all of our lifestyles possible, is inventing tools and coming up with tools and using tools that maximizes the productivity of our labor. So in this economy, what happens is one of the guys, Abel, thinks of a way to improve his efficiency of catching fish by coming up with something called a net. Now, at that point, net had never been invented before. He didn't even know if it could work. And he had to build the net. You know, he didn't know if it was – and in order to build the net, he couldn't fish that day. He has to underconsume. He can't fish that day. He can't work. He's got to direct his labor elsewhere to build a piece of capital, which may or may not work. So he's taking risk. Very important thing in an economy. We talk about risk. We talk about underconsumption. He underconsumes to build a piece of capital. Now, he doesn't want the net. The net doesn't do any good for him by itself. It's only worthwhile if it can actually catch fish,
right?
Which is an important explanation of what capital does. And then, so he does it. He underconsumes. His other island inhabitants, Baker and Charlie, they don't know what he's doing. They kind of laugh at him. They wonder, well, look, if it doesn't work, don't ask for one of my fish, because I'm not going to give up my fish because you decide not to fish one day. And he's taking that risk. And he builds the net, and it works, and he catches two fish a day. Once they have two fish a day, not only does their island economy expand, but since he also can catch more than he needs to live, he also creates savings. Then we start talking about what the uses of the savings are and why that savings can create growth. We talk about how we could lend it, how we can invest it, how we can save it, how we can consume it. And that savings opens up a lot of possibilities that didn't exist before. And we want to communicate to people how in the current economic debate, all they talk about is spending. Spending fuels growth. But we try to say spending doesn't fuel growth. The thing that we say is, you know, eventually these guys start eating more fish. Well, they start eating more fish because they caught more fish. And the point we make is that their economy grew not because they decided they had more demand or they wanted to spend more, but their economy, but they ate more or spent more because their economy grew. Very important distinction.
All right. And when we come back, we got to take a little break here, Andrew. But when we come back, I want to challenge you on that, because that is a major fundamental part of your book. And I want to give some real world examples and have you comment on that. But we're not going to go to commercial break. We're just going to give away a free McConnell's ice cream. That's a single scoop ice cream or yogurt with one topping. That'll go to the second caller at 639-0008, 639-0008. Remember, McConnell's ice cream is made with the French pot method. They use 17% butterfat to give it that rich, creamy flavor. And McConnell's ice cream is the only ice cream that's manufactured here on the Central Coast. Andrew, you should know this. You were up at UCSB. It's manufactured right there in Santa Barbara. So the ice cream will go to the second caller at 639-0008, 639-0008. Now, back to you, Andrew Schiff, author of the book, How an Economy Grows and Why It Crashes. And you're saying, you know, how an economy grows is when everybody's standard of living rises. Yeah, I get that part. But this is probably where the Austrian school of economics comes in versus the Keynesian school. And I don't want to get too heavy on people, but basically what our government is saying and what many pundits on television are saying is we've got to get the American consumer spending again, because consumer spending is what drives the economy. After all, 70% of the U.S. economy is derived from consumer spending. And just to look at a point in history, a reference point in history, take a look at a nation of savers. That would be Japan, as my example. Japan has always been a nation of savers, but their economy is absolutely moribund and hasn't gone anywhere for over a decade. So how can you say savings is really the crux to all of this when clearly in the United States' case, it looks to be spending is the key?
Well, I mean, Japan is kind of a special case. The savings in China is probably more impressive than Japan. I mean, the savings rate in China right now is actually higher. It's like a 30% savings rate. And I noticed, I was watching television today, and they talked about how just one of the major Chinese stock exchanges, the Shenzhen Exchange, now increase, has more volume on a daily basis than the New York Stock Exchange. And if you throw in all three major Chinese exchanges, they dwarf the volume of the New York Stock Exchange. And you clearly, obviously, the Chinese economy is off the charts right now and continuing to grow, and that's pretty much based on their savings. In Japan, I mean, they have a lot of debt issues there, and they also have a very active government where the government spends a lot of money as opposed to China where they don't spend as much. And they also have a demographic problem in China where they don't have enough kids to support their prior generations.
Right.
But they do have a lot of savings, and most of the debt that they have is owed to themselves. And their living standards are still relatively high, but still there's kind of a special case. But I do want to get back, and you mentioned spending. And
yes.
In our book, we did make an example, try to spell it out to people. We said, like, let's imagine that someone decides to sell you some air.
And, okay.
And you go to an elf and you buy you spend $1 million on air. Guy sells you air for $1 million. Now, according to the GDP figures, that would be $1 million worth of economic growth.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be booked as economic growth. But what has that transaction really done? I mean, are you any better by spending $1 million for air? No, you're not. In fact, you're $1 million poorer. Is the economy any better off for you spending $1 million on air? No. The guy who sold you the air, he's better off. But it's a zero-sum game. Your loss is his gain. You haven't improved anything. And the point we're trying to make is the act of spending doesn't mean anything. If something had to be produced, well, the air doesn't have to be produced. We're trying to make it, but if something actually had to be produced, let's say, you know, $1 million worth of milk, as opposed to air, because milk's not free.
Right.
Then the economy has the milk that it didn't have before. So the production of the milk is a good thing. You know, but by selling something that wasn't ordered, that was always there, that doesn't make any difference in the economy. You actually have to go out and produce something that wasn't there before, and that will benefit. That's actually economic growth.
Okay.
And that's the point we're trying to make.
I see.
That's a big difference in Keynesians and Austrians.
I see what you're saying. I get the point. And your book is titled "How an Economy Grows and Why It Crashes." I think you've done a great job of really reducing it down to a very manageable story and lots of illustrations that anybody can read. As you said earlier in the interview, you can give this book to a teenager; they can follow it and really understand how an economy works.
It gets into inflation and things like that.
Yeah, and credit investment, trade impact, all of that. But I have no idea how many politicians, with maybe the exception of Ron Paul, who've read your book. But if you were president for a day, Andrew Schiff, how would you direct Congress right now?
How would I direct Congress?
That's yeah.
A good question. I would ask them to say, look, you know, you guys have to understand that there's a bigger cause here than your own reelection. Look at our structural long-term deficit problem. We have to address our long-term deficit. It's going to be a major disaster in 5 or 10 years where we there's a fiction that we can pay off what we owe. We're not even counting half of what we owe in terms of our unfunded liabilities. Now we've got we've got over $1 trillion in debt coming due from Fannie and Freddie that we're not going to be able to pay for. Now governments are making all the home loans. Speak to the American people, level with the American people, understand that we can't pay for all that we've promised. And we've got to make changes now while we still have a chance to make changes. And that means cutting deficit government spending. That means drastically reforming entitlement. People who think that they're going to get a lot of money from the government have to understand that money's not going to be coming. Because, yes, it's possible the government can meet all its obligations by printing as much money as we want. But then the money won't have any value. And everyone who owns dollars will lose that value. So that's a success. It's a complete fiction that we can print our way out of this hole. So we have to make those real changes now. We can't make it through raising taxes. If you raise taxes enough, then we'll kill our economy as well. So we can't grow government. We can't grow the economy at the same time. We're going to have to cut government and cut entitlements and cut government spending and cut back on our empire.
Uh-oh. Now you're sounding like Greece, Andrew.
Well, we're not. Look, if you look at the numbers, we're not that different from Greece.
How so?
Greece had the EU to bail them out, and we've got China to bail us out. But China's not going to be bailing us out forever.
Well, they haven't lost their appetite for U.S. bonds yet. What makes you think they won't continue to buy them?
Well, they want to manage that. They want to, although they're allowing the yuan to float freely. well, to run up freely, but they're allowing it to appreciate. They still want to manage that value, and they can manage it through the purchase of U.S. Treasury bonds. If they were to stop their purchase of U.S. Treasury bonds, then the dollar would completely fall apart. I mean, it wouldn't fall by 3%; it would fall by 50%. People say, well, China doesn't ever do that because they don't want to hurt the value of their own dollar holdings. But they have very, very many more holdings in their own currency than they do in the dollar. And their currency, their purchasing power would rise when they let the dollar go. So it would be an actually net gain for them. But they don't want to have any violent changes in the course of the global economy. They want to manage things very seamlessly in China. So they're going to keep it going for a while. But believe me, they don't have any long-term interest in continuing to finance our debt, which is what they're doing. Mm. You can see in China they're starting to refocus on their own domestic markets, which is what they should be doing as they increase their own purchasing power. And this is all explained in the book very clearly, how the Chinese don't need us. We've convinced the world that the American economy is the engine of the world economy because we have all the spending. The American consumers are the best spenders, so everyone else manufactures, and then we spend and we get their products, and that's some kind of a symbiotic relationship that we both benefit by that.
We
point out in the book that's ridiculous.
We're talking to Andrew Schiff, everybody, author of the book How an Economy Grows and Why It Crashes. But let me just challenge you on that point a little bit. Because the Chinese are trying, we only have a couple of minutes left, because the Chinese are trying to raise the value of the yuan, they're trying to do that in part so that their own consumer society will start to consume more, buy more Chinese goods and products domestically, and become a consumer society like the United States. Aren't they walking down the same path that we're on right now?
Well, I mean, I guess you could make that point, but they're way, 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 way earlier in the process. I mean, they want to emulate what we did 100 years ago. I mean, the American economy became the most successful and the most prosperous in the world, the same way the Chinese are doing it right now, through production. The big difference is that we didn't really, although we were an export economy in the 1890s, 1900, 1910, we exported a lot of goods. We became the world's biggest exporter, but we also sold all of our goods to ourselves. I mean, there were no imported products, essentially, in the United States in 1900, 1910. Everything was made domestically. And all the fruits of our own labor, all our increased productivity was made available to our own consumers. And, you know, people had so much more vis-a-vis their grandparents. In 1920, people had cars, people had big houses, electricity. I mean, their grandparents had none of those things, and their living standards were much, 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 much lower. They hadn't built plumbing. They had radios, phonographs. It was amazing the level of prosperity that we created in this country in just a few years, similar to what's going on in China. And we did it through production. The difference is that we were a consumer society and a producing society, and you should be both. Whereas right now, China is mostly just a production society, and they're exporting their consumption to us primarily. But consumption that's the fun part. That's the part you want. You don't work to work. You work to consume.
All right.
Consuming is the fun part. That's the part people want to do.
All right. Andrew, 1 minute left, and I'm just going to shotgun this question at you. Off your cuff response to this. Should the Bush tax cuts be allowed to lapse?
Well, I mean, it's great to have tax cuts. I mean, to have low taxes. I totally believe in low taxes. That's a big part of economic. You can't have economic growth with high taxes. But at the same time, we're just going to let this bring back the tax cuts and keep our spending high. We're just going to have huge deficits that we're going to impose on a future generation. So that's an easy solution. But if you're not going to couple the tax cuts with meaningful spending cuts, it's just kicking the can down the road and creating a bigger problem.
All right. We're talking to Andrew Schiff, everybody, author of the book, How an Economy Grows and Why It Crashes. Andrew, I can't believe how quickly the time has gone. Thank you so much for being our guest here
on
Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
My pleasure.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
That brings us to the end of another show. You've been listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're on every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ AM 1400 or streaming on the internet at 1400kkzz.com. Coming up next is Leading Your Inspired Life with Susan Burrell. We end each show by saying, go out and be the change you want to see in the world. Remember, the leaders of the past didn't hold with today's conventions, and neither will the leaders of tomorrow. See you tomorrow.